Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is Wednesday, the 13th of October. Joining us in just a moment, Composing a Further Life, we'll be speaking with Mary Catherine Bateson. It is the Age of Active Wisdom, the second part of the title. She's such a phenomenally interesting woman. She was the Clarence Robinson Professor in Anthropology and English at George Mason University. She's a visiting scholar at the Center on Aging and Workplace Flexibility at Boston College and was president of the Institute of Intercultural Studies in New York City. She's written a number of books. She is the daughter of Margaret Mead. And this particular book looks at this life cycle when people are starting to think, because they live so much longer and they're so much healthier, what it is we should do as we reach that age about 55 to 70. So it's a book really for everybody, because we hope that we'll all be that age at some point. She calls it an improvisational art form calling for imagination and willingness to learn. And she relates the experiences of men and women, herself included, who are in this second adulthood. So she's going to be with us. It's going to be a great hour. Stay tuned. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. This, of course, is listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive. You are the foundation of our budget, and it's why we're asking for your gift right now. Please give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. This hour, we have a goal of 50 pledges. These hourly goals are extremely important. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep discussions on Wisconsin Public Radio going, just like the one today. So take a moment right now and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And anyone who pledges at that $150 level today is going to receive a copy of Mary Catherine Bateson's book, Composing a Further Life. And in addition, I have another exciting announcement.
All
today.
Right.
Anyone who pledges any amount today is going to be entered in a drawing to win a new iPad. So it's very exciting.
All right. Great. So all you have to do is make a gift of any amount. If you can do $150, we're very happy to send you Mary's book. And here's how you pledge: WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can use a credit card if you can. It saves both you and WPR time and the price of a stamp. Or better yet, you can sign up for an automatic with sustaining donation from your bank account. And don't worry, WPR doesn't share any of your personal information with any other organization. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Thank Rhonda. You. We'll see you later this hour. And a reminder, it's $150 for Mary Catherine Bateson's book. And I know that you will find it important as you think about your life and where you may be in this. Yeah, I think it's great. We do have a second adulthood now because we're living so much longer, and what we can do with that time in our lives when many people are still quite vital. And she has terrific stories to share of people she has interviewed who are in this phase as she is herself. So call and pledge WPR, well, to call 888-202-2552 or to pledge online WPR.org. Mary Catherine Bateson is our guest this hour. She is the daughter of Margaret Mead. She was Clarence Robinson Professor in Anthropology and English at George Mason University, and she is a visiting scholar at the Center on Aging and Workplace Flexibility at Boston College. She's the author of Composing a Life, With a Daughter's Eye, a memoir of Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson, Peripheral Visions, Learning Along the Way, Full Circles, Overlapping Lives, Culture and Generation in Transition, and also Willing to Learn, Passages of Personal Discovery. She has met with some extraordinary people, and she outlines them and how they are making sense of their second adulthood. And we're very happy to have her with us this hour of the program. You can join the conversation by phone. Our studio line is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Mary Catherine Bateson, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to be on public radio.
Public radio is wonderful. When you talk about second adulthood, I mean, many of us get ideas of what we can do in second adulthood from public radio, I think, to say nothing of what it does for us during the whole course of life.
Well, and it also helps us keep up.
Yes.
I mean, one of the reasons why there are people who are scornful of older people in our society is because change is so rapid, so that one of the obligations I think we have is to stay engaged, keep informed, and keep on learning.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about this meeting, because I was highly interested, and I know it made a huge difference in your life. In 2002, Ellen Goodman, you write, who was then 61 years old, invited you to a small informal conference with a group of women that she and Patricia Schroeder, who served, of course, many years in the House of Representatives, got together, and you talked about, you all had careers, you all had grown children, you were all currently married, all in your 60s, and you were talking about where to go from there.
Well, you know, we all belong to the generation that was involved in new wave feminism back in the day. And that involved groups of women getting together and becoming aware of the way their lives were controlled by stereotypes projected on them. So the culture had been telling us what we were supposed to want out of life, how a good girl or a good woman behaves. And it was important for all of us to reexamine who we are and who we wanted to be. And all of us, in one way or another, had struggled to have careers in addition to having family lives. So as you begin to come up on what you can call traditional retirement age, people start saying, aren't you looking forward to stopping working? And most of us had no desire to stop working. We had struggled to be able to work and to have that sense of making a contribution. And so it seemed like a good time to get back into conversation and not only be dealing with stereotypes about women's roles, but also stereotypes about aging and how people are supposed to behave at particular ages, because, in fact, aging has changed fundamentally in our society, largely because of breakthroughs in healthcare.
That's what's so striking about the book. As I was reading it, I was thinking, this is something new, and it's because of the fact that we're living longer and we are healthy, if we're lucky, and also because of the women's movement, which you just described, so that women particularly have more years, and they also have already had careers, many of them, or full lives, and now they can do something else. So that the possibility, we're talking about a first-time thing in many ways for a lot of women, adulthood too.
I think we're talking about a first-time thing for many men, only they don't know it yet. I mean, part of the reason I wrote this book is that people are coming up on their 50s and 60s governed by stereotypes that they incorporated 30, 40 years ago, which are now obsolete. And in some ways, the very fact that women had to rethink the shape that their lives would take back in the 60s and 70s makes women more aware of the fact that we are now pioneering in new territory. As a species, we're pioneering
yes.
new territory.
Well, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I want to go back for a moment. There's a lot of your life in this book as well, to the Kennedy assassination. It's hard to believe that Kennedy was elected 50 years ago this year, 50 years ago. But you write about the fact that you had voted for the first time in 1960 in the Kennedy-Nixon election. And when Kennedy was assassinated, I believe you were teaching Arabic, and you made a promise that you would work to make some small increment of hope in the world. The assassination really moved you to change yourself in some ways. Can you talk Mary Catherine, a little bit more about how you made that decision and what you've done with it.
Well, I arrived at the building in which I was supposed to teach an Arabic class. And as I started to go through the door, one of my students ran up to me and said, "They've shot the president, but he's still alive." And I went in, and my class was in the room. But about 5 minutes later, the bells of the Memorial Church on the Harvard campus began to toll. And I knew that Kennedy had died. And I dismissed the class, and I went off and sat in a dark Catholic church near the campus and tried to make sense of what had happened. I think at that time we were less aware of thinking of the impact of events in global terms.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat there and I thought of how this piece of news would resonate around the world, and that it would affect people's sense of their own future, their own safety and security, not just in the United States, but everywhere on the planet, as now every disaster does, because we all hear of it so quickly. And I had this mental image of a peasant farmer plowing with a wooden plow in rocky soil, and I imagine someone in India or perhaps Pakistan, who maybe there was a transistor radio in the village, no newspapers, no television, but a transistor radio, who would hear this news from the other side of the globe and would have his confidence in the future, his sense of hope, would be reduced by the fact that this could happen.
Yes.
And might become part of a process of a war, or who knew what it could lead to. That the stability of the world he lived in was shaken by this assassination. And at that time, I was teaching Arabic language. And my doctorate was in linguistics. And I thought that to make some contribution to hope in the world, I had to move away from the fascination of grammar and linguistic analysis, do something closer to people's lives. So at that point, I volunteered to be a TA, a teaching assistant, in a course taught by Eric Erickson.
Oh, sure.
On the human life cycle.
Hmm.
And learned his whole approach to the study of the life cycle, which was based on how people develop strength and resilience rather than on how people become neurotic. And that really has guided me professionally ever since.
And it's interesting that you were thinking about that news being received by somebody in a poor country. Another thing that you write about is interdependence. And there's, if we're lucky to live long enough to have a second adulthood, interdependence is important during those years. But it's hard to do that in America. And it's interesting. It's a challenge for us to see events in terms of interdependence, because it makes a huge difference to the world what happens here and what happens in Pakistan, et cetera. We have such an emphasis on independence in America, don't we?
Indeed, we do. And when I started focusing on later adulthood, my initial phrasing was that I was going to write a book about aging. And in the process, I learned that there's this gift of time before what we think of as old age really sets in. When I started reading the literature and thinking about that, I was struck by the way the word independence turns up again and again in the literature.
Mm-hmm.
Most prominently in Independent Living, in people saying they don't want to be dependent on anyone, especially not their own children.
Right.
But one should also notice what economists talk about as the dependency ratio. You know, that there are a certain number of productive adults and everybody else is dependent on them. And the assumption that older adults are not making a contribution. Of course, economists miss a lot of contributions, including many contributions made by women. In any case, then I remembered the way in which child-rearing advice in the United States is full of references to independence training. And the way in which our style of child-rearing, and this really, in human history, the idea that when you have a new baby just home from the hospital, you put that baby in a crib all by herself or himself, in a room by herself or himself with a monitor, instead of sleeping with the baby in contact with other human bodies. So this notion of independence is very pervasive in our culture. And I would argue that there is no such thing as independence, that we depend on other human beings all the time. We depend on the oceans. We depend on the atmosphere. We depend on other species of plants and animals. And that we should be thinking in terms of interdependence.
Yes.
So people look ahead to their later years, and they don't want to depend on others. But the way to avoid dependence is to find a way, as long as you can, as long as health supports that, to be making a contribution so that you experience yourself as in an interdependent, two-way relationship.
Making a contribution, that is key. Our guest this hour is Mary Catherine Bateson. Her latest book is Composing a Further Life, The Age of Active Wisdom. I don't know about you, but I knew that I must ask her, and I will momentarily, about her mother, who was Margaret Mead, and whether or not independence training or interdependence was the way that Mary Catherine grew up. I think it would be interesting to learn about that. She writes about this age 55 to 70. You can push that a little bit, I think, now at the end of those years, 70 and probably a little beyond that. And adulthood too is what she calls it. And the book is also filled with interviews with a number of people who are in that cycle. And you have to look at your whole life to determine where you are when you're in that cycle as well. So the interviews are with some very interesting people, somebody who built boats and is making jewelry now, a gay couple focusing on one of the men in the relationship who was married and had children, but had always wanted to live somewhere on the West Coast and in a more positive kind of environment. The story of Dan and Michael, very interesting. Jane Fonda was writing a book at the same time that Mary Catherine was, and they had two tape recorders going at the same time. So they talked to each other, and a number of other people are featured in this book as well as Mary Catherine Bateson's wisdom about this. Here's our phone number for you to join us on air if you would like to do that. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. I do want to remind you that we are in our fall membership drive. And if you, I know that many of you would like to pledge and would like to do so right now, we're entirely pleased to offer you Mary Catherine Bateson's book for a $150 pledge. Here's the number, 888 for pledging, 202-2552, 888-202-2552, or WPR.org. But join us on air as we continue our conversation with Mary Catherine Bateson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. second hour of our program today, Sean Wilentz will be with us, and we're going to be talking about Bob Dylan, because Sean has written a book about Bob Dylan, Bob Dylan in America. Sean is professor in the American Revolutionary Era at Princeton University. He's the author of The Rise of American Democracy and most recently The Age of Reagan. He's the historian in residence for Bob Dylan's official website. So that's coming up, hour number two. This hour of the program, Mary Catherine Bateson, her latest book, she has written many of them, Composing a Further Life, The Age of Active Wisdom. Before we go to phone calls, as they're coming in, Mary Catherine, I'd like for you to talk a little bit about some of the people who are interviewed. And if you would, please, because this issue of gay marriage and affording people who are gay all that life has to offer for other Americans is so front and center right now in this country. Can you talk about the story that you include in the book of Dan and Michael?
Kathleen, before I start, I want to take the opportunity to say that we should not limit our concept of adulthood to 55 to 70. For some people, it may start at 40, particularly professional dancers or athletes.
Perhaps. Yes, yes.
For some people, it may continue until 90. It really has to, as you get older, the path of development varies more and more. And a lot depends, of course, on people's health and on the accidents of life. So this is a period that can be surprisingly long and productive and vary for different people. Many people think as people get older, they get more and more alike. They don't. As long as they have their wits basically about them, people become more different, not more alike, more distinctive. So let's not narrow it down by age, particularly since the demographic changes that we're experiencing now will resonate through the entire life cycle. If you stop and think about it, you want one kind of a school system for a population in which average life expectancy is 40, as it was at the beginning of the 20th century, a bit over 40, and quite a different educational system for a population with an average life expectancy approaching 80, as we have now.
Mm-hmm.
You want not to cram their heads with a predetermined set of facts that will be sufficient for a lifetime, but to sustain and nourish curiosity so that people will continue learning all the way through that lifetime. And similarly, a productive and exciting adulthood, too, depends in many ways on what people do to develop wisdom in the course of their lives. And that involves learning, of course, study at appropriate moments, experience, diverse experience. And, you know, I don't think, experience is the best teacher, but you can't count on experience making you wise. You know, some people make the same mistakes again and again.
Right.
It's reflection on experience that makes you wise.
Yes.
So if people are going to approach adulthood too, physically healthy and active, but also wise, they need to find opportunities for reflection and new learning throughout the life cycle.
All right, let's change direction for just a moment here. Ron, I want to get to at least a call here. Ron in Milwaukee. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Yes, I'm the father of a child with significant disabilities, and the one thing I've learned nurturing him, parenting him, is that life is about interdependence, not so much the rugged individualist model that we had in the past, but it's really about relationships and how much we can learn from the diversity of the people we relate to. And so my child's life is a quality life, as my life, my quality of my life has improved because of him, and my learning has just multiplied exponentially because I'm relating to and involving him in my life and in the life of my community. Can you comment on what we have to learn from nurturing children with disabilities and really relating with so many diverse people?
You know, I think we always learn from looking at a given relationship in terms of what is flowing in both directions. Many parents dealing with a child with disabilities focus on the child's needs and the special efforts that they have to make to meet those needs. But there is a whole world to discover by examining what we learn from the needs of others and from trying to meet those needs and how people develop under those circumstances. Basically, that's the human pattern. Human infants are born with the capacity to turn two rather self-centered and incompetent adults into good enough parents. And children raise their parents just as parents raise their children. And I think we should look at all relationships that way, to realize that teachers learn from their students. Eminent professors learn from their students. Doctors learn from their patients. And that there is a flow always in both directions. So we don't ever become arrogant and think we're making all the contributions or establishing what's happening. So I think your journey with your child is actually an extraordinary privilege of self-learning for you.
Oh, I like so much what you said, that we do need to remember that that we learn very profound things from each other, no matter what our position is. Mary Catherine Beetson is our guest this hour. Her book is Composing a Further Life, The Age of Active Wisdom. And as she just said, this active wisdom could happen at different times in our lives. If you're a dancer or a professional athlete, it's going to happen for you earlier in your life, that you are into an adulthood that is your second adulthood, and what you do with that and how you give, how you continually can give in your life and become a different kind of you. She is, she was professor in anthropology and English at George Mason University until recently. She is a visiting scholar at the Center of Aging and Workplace Flexibility at Boston College, and until recently was president of the Institute of Intercultural Studies in New York City. She is the author of Composing a Life with a Daughter's Eye, a memoir of Margaret Mead. Margaret Mead is her mother. And Gregory Bateson, Peripheral Visions, Learning Along the Way, and a number of other books. We're welcoming phone calls for her. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Rhonda Fanning joining me in our Milwaukee studios now. As a regular listener to this program, you know that you are always going to hear something worthwhile. And I guess this is the epitome of what is worthwhile today. We're asking you to put a value on this program because your contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio is, I must tell you, a big part of what keeps us going. So please support the program, everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, by making a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen. So we have a goal this hour of 50 pledges. And hey, look at that. We're at 24 right now.
Great.
So we're about halfway through the show and halfway towards our goal. So we need to hear from 26 more listeners this hour. But we won't have to stop there. We can keep going. More of you are more than welcome to call. And again, at that pledge of $150, you're going to receive a copy of Mary Catherine Bateson's book. And anyone who pledges any amount this hour is going to be entered to win that iPad drawing that will come at the end of our drive. So that's very exciting, but you have to pledge today. Today is the only time you can be entered in that drawing.
All right. And you know, I know that many of you, when we get off the air, sometimes we talk about what we've heard and we remember the shows that we've had. I know that many of you have moments when you were listening to this network and you heard something and you thought, oh, that's a great thought. And you'll carry that thought with you and it will enter further conversations that you may have. Something that was really interesting. We strive every day for programs that open your eyes and engage your brain, programs that affect your life. And this kind of radio only happens with your financial support. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we know that after paying your bills, we know it might not be easy to find anything extra, especially now in this economy. Mm-hmm. That's why it's up to you to decide how much to give. Any donation makes you a member of WPR. You pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. How much you give is not as important as the fact that you do give.
You can listen to WPR every day for years, you know, and you'll never get a bill from us. We don't count how many minutes you listen, but we do use the honor system. Don't you love that phrase? The honor system is what we use. Remember, you decide how much WPR is worth to you. It may be a dollar or two a week or a dollar a day. You decide, and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget that a pledge of $150 this hour is going to get you a copy of the book Composing a Further Life and entered to win that iPad that is only offered today.
There.
Thanks, Kathleen.
That's great. Thanks very much, Rhonda. Mary Catherine Bateson is our guest, Composing a Further Life, The Age of Active Wisdom. And we're welcoming phone calls on air for her, 800-48. We got a lot of numbers here, but you can remember them. You're smart. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Let's go to Glory, our next caller, Mary Catherine from Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hi, Glory.
Hi. I'm so glad to be speaking with you. This is something that's bothered me for quite a few years. I work with kids who are being mentored. I coordinate a mentoring program as well as after-school programs, theater for kids, and I work with a lot of disadvantaged youth. And wherever I go, I walk into rooms where there are these motivational posters, and they all involve, I know everyone here has seen those, where like someone is climbing a mountaintop and it says inspiration or courage. It shows one single individual accomplishing something they wanted to accomplish. And I think while that is wonderful, I think that we're doing a disservice to our children, that we're showing that that's what courage is, or that is what inspiration is, or teamwork. I've even seen teamwork written on those versus something like the Woolworths counter, where, you know, you have black and white students who were having things thrown at them, but they were standing up for a cause. To me, that's real courage. And or other things that show interdependence, this idea that we are helping each other, that those are the true peer people out there that we should be looking up to, or inspiring, or teamwork, or any of those kinds of things. That's just my comment, and I'd like to hear what you'd have to say. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glory.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that, and I think we would benefit from more emphasis on interdependence at every stage of the life cycle, including encouraging elementary and high school kids to study together. Because in fact, the evidence shows that working together and discussing things is often more productive than working alone. As I look at people in second adulthood, I'm really struck by what a difference it makes when people look around them and think about how they can make a contribution, even as they may need some supportive help at the same time. And this is one reason why I did very much want to include a gay couple in my study.
Mm-hmm.
My original interest was the question of grandchildren and whether grandparents have a longer time perspective and therefore might influence policy making in this country on issues of what will the world be like in which our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren will grow up. But I was also struck by the fact that in the case of this couple, they had both moved around a great deal. They'd had a variety of different relationships, which is fairly typical in the gay community, and that they had moved into a stage of life where it was important to them to be committed to each other and to each one be looking after the well-being of the other. And that seemed to me to be a valuable stage to arrive at in their lives. And I was struck by the concern that they shared for other members of the gay community. You know, there's gay liberation is fairly recent, and there's not a lot of provision made yet for retirement, housing, and things of that sort. So one of the things that seems to happen fairly commonly in second adulthood and happens with couples of all kinds is people wanting to make stable commitments and maintain them and being willing to care for each other, which is a very important part of our cooperation with each other. A variation it goes into perhaps in later life, but we should be caring for each other at every stage of life.
Thank you, Glory, so much for your call. We go to Barbara from Madison next. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you for the show today. I've spent a lot of time in India, and I've really been influenced by Hindu philosophy embracing so many different stages of life, including after fulfilling the householder roles, becoming a lot more engaged in the interior spiritual life. And so I'm also feeling as though, as Americans, sometimes the emphasis is so much on external action and continuing that in aging. And I just would like some comments about that. And I'll hang up to listen.
Thank you.
Thank
Barbara.
You.
Barbara.
Well, let me respond by building on what I said earlier about reflection. There is really a tradition around the world of older years giving people more opportunity for reflection and spiritual growth, which may be in the framework of a specific religious tradition, perhaps something they were taught in childhood that they returned to in later years, or perhaps in terms of responsibility and caring for others that might not be stated in religious terms. One of the things that many people have in later adulthood is more leisure, time to reflect. And several people, several of the people that I interviewed had taken up meditative, contemplative practices, had taught themselves to be more reflective and introspective people. I found myself going back and reawakening earlier religious commitments, reaffirming faith. there's a sense in which the most important strength to take through second adulthood and into old age is trust, which is learned in the earliest months of human life. You know, human childhood is essential to becoming full human beings. We have to learn to love. We have to learn to trust. We have to learn to have the will to hold on to purposes. These are things for which the foundation is laid very early in life. And it turns out that in later years, these are essential strengths in dealing with changes and transitions.
So it's all part of the same, isn't it? What happens very early on makes a huge difference in terms of who you are in adulthood, too.
Absolutely.
Or who you can be. Yeah. Interesting. Thank you very much, Barbara, for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. Jim is calling on the road. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Kenton. Thank your guest. I'm in my 70s, and my question, I guess, is we had a friend, the wife had a friend that was in her 40s that had fell off a scaffolding and crushed her pelvis, and she'd been recently divorced from an abusive husband and had a child, and naturally he'd lost his job and had no insurance. They found a doctor that had would do the surgery on her reconstructor pelvis free, which was great in the Dubuque area. And he'd done the surgery, and the hospital released her 4 or 5 days later, saying that basically because she had no insurance, she couldn't have any therapy, and it was time for her to go home. She's living with a friend in an apartment in a cast. I guess my question is to your guest is, how can we convince the younger generation that without Medicare, without Social Security, without some kind of health care system or some other system to make us independent or to help us long in independence so that we can keep these programs viable, and in future years, we're all going to need that help. The younger generation is not that they've forgot it, but I think that they just have not been taught that in later years, as you get older, you're going to need that help.
Mary Catherine.
I think the way to do this is to emphasize interdependence all the way through the educational system. What we're finding at the moment is a lot of people that say they don't need that help and don't want to put tax money into it, but boy, do they scream when some particular government service or support that they have relied on disappears. And people are not aware of, I mean, just to give you an example, people think of Social Security as a program for old people. But if we did not have Social Security, the adults in their 40s would have the full responsibility for supporting ailing, aging parents. Social Security also helps care for people with disabilities. And so something like Social Security is not limited to its effect on the later years. It's a program that supports families and affects people of all ages.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Jim. I want to get to one more phone call. Jane is next. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. I'm interested in knowing what it was like or what effect it had on you to grow up with such giants as Gregory Bateson. You were married to him, I assume, and to your mother. And the other question is, are there biographies that you think are the best that indicate what they were, what their interior life was really like?
Well, I had two fascinating parents.
Yes, you did.
And I mean, I grew up in the middle of a conference because there were people coming and going talking about ideas all the time. Someone earlier referred to wanting to know if I was brought up to believe in interdependence. One of the extraordinary things about my parents is the way they listened to me, the way they assumed that my – they wanted me to listen to their conversations and know about their work, and they were interested in my responses and my questions, which gave me a kind of confidence that is harder to get in school, I may say. And, of course, my father became very much involved with environmental and ecological issues later in life, which are essentially issues of interdependence, of the way in which different species interact in the environment. So they were extraordinarily interesting, stimulating, and supportive parents. And I would say one of the most unusual things about, particularly my mother, because my parents divorced when I was 11, so I didn't live with my father, but that my mother, for instance, let me decide to stay and live in Israel by myself, learning Hebrew from scratch to enter an Israeli school when I was 16.
Wow, that is remarkable. And that story can be continued when we talk about recommendations. You've written a book that I would recommend people go to, Mary Catherine Bateson, which is a memoir with a daughter's eye, a memoir of Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson, for those who want to carry this further. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a wonderful conversation. Mary Catherine Bateson, it's Composing a Further Life, her book, The Age of Active Wisdom. I loved Mary Catherine Bateson's line. I feel like I grew up in the middle of a conference. There were all these ideas all the time, and I feel like we're in the middle of a stimulating conference. Maybe conference isn't the right word, but stimulating ideas all the time. This is our fall membership drive. As you know, Rhonda Fanning is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. We count on you to keep these discussions on the air, so please make a gift right now and help us pay for the program you depend on. Give now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552. Hello again, Rhonda.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. I just wanted to thank Carrie from Brookfield along the lines of Mary Catherine Bateson's sentiment. She said, she called in Pledge of the Hour and said, WPR starts my day with food for thought and often provides the topic for dinner conversation. That happens to me about every day. I'm sure
me
it happens
too.
To you, Kathleen, and Chrissy, the other producer, and probably many of you out there listening. And again, I want to remind people that this hour they can pledge at that $150 level and get a copy of Mary Catherine Bateson's book, Composing a Further Life. And you'll also be entered to win. I keep mentioning the iPad because they're just really cool. And so anyone who pledges this hour is going to be entered in that drawing.
Oh, the iPads. Yeah.
Yes.
They're really cool.
They
huh?
are.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's like a big version of the iPhone,
okay.
But cooler.
Cool.
So that's today only to get entered in that drawing. So a pledge of any amount will get you into that drawing. You don't even have to pledge. You can just send a postcard.
Oh.
To iPad Drawing, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Ave, and that is in Madison. And the zip code there is 53706.
But we also want to remind you, too, that this is a big hour for good things. You enjoyed the conversation. She was a beautiful speaker, wasn't she? She thought about what you said very carefully and composed her thoughts carefully. For a $150 pledge, you can read more about – it's not concentrating on her life with her mom, Margaret Mead, and her father, but it mentions, of course, and she is the product of her mother and father. And there's a lot. There's a lot in this book about adulthood too. Take a few minutes this hour to make many more hours to come possible. Please pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. You can give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help pay for the programs that you come to depend on each and every day. here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe you found yourself thinking about something in a new or different way after you've heard one of the shows on WPR. That's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view, and you value what you hear. So pledge your support now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And our lines are open for you. Please remember that we do these kinds of programs day in and day out. It's just a special hour with Margaret Mead's daughter, Mary Catherine Bateson, our guest, and her important book about making a contribution. Essentially, that's what it's about. And, you know, that's what we try to do. We try to make a contribution every day.
That's right.
Most days, I think, we're on the mark.
And we don't often come to you to ask you to make your contribution, but we are right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we're moving along here. Thanks, everybody, for all of your pledges and for listening. Although it wasn't hard to listen to Mary Catherine Bateson, it's kind of a treat, isn't it? Thanks, Rhonda Fanning, for producing the hour. Chrissy Pease, on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have a great hour coming up, but you can still pledge for this past hour, $150, and we're so happy to send you the book that we were talking about. I'm Kathleen Dunn.